الأنبياء والمرسلين، سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم
وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين الذين ذهب الله عنهم رجسه وطهرهم تطهيرا.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى
أما بعد، قال الله الحكيم في كتابه الكريم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: ولقد كتبنا في الزبور من بعد الذكر أن الأرض يريثها عبادي الصالحون. صدق الله العلي العظيم.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
Our series of discussions have gone into a sixth night. These nights are slowly passing away. As is the nature of time, as is the nature of life. What remains is the good that we do on this earth. Our life as it is has been created for a purpose. We've not just been created for the sake of being created. You've been given an intellect for a reason. You've been given emotions for a reason. In these 10 nights, you find two things take place. And this is why these nights are grand. These nights require pondering. These nights require realignment. Two things happen. One is ma'rifah. Ma'rifah differs from just knowledge. To read a book, to cram information in your mind is one thing. For light to touch your heart and for you to have vision is another thing. Not every alim is a hakim. But you find even Luqman, who was a slave, has been enshrined in the Quran because of his sincerity. He's a hakim. And what is the purpose of a hakim? A hakim can take an entire ocean and put it into a shell. And then after that, for thousands of years, ulama, intellectuals, can sit down discussing what the true meaning behind it was. Your imams, your prophet, present a capsule. And for you then, is to discuss what they truly meant. This is why they say that only an angel can understand the akhbar of Ali Muhammad, or a person whose heart's been tested, or the Anbiya. So therefore, if your heart is being tested, if you're being tested in this life, there's a reason behind that. When you read a hadith, if you understand the same thing as you did 20 years ago, you've not developed. Why do you think today our marajib are 70, 80, 90 years old, though they've done their intellectual and academic works by the age of 30, 40? The fact is this, they're evolving. Even Ayatollah Sistani today changes his fatwa, and he has done a number of fatwa in the last couple of years. Why is that? Because he's evolving. He's understanding again. It's a human process, and it's required. If you're stagnant, you're going backwards. So you've got to go forwards. And for you to go forward means that you have to unravel continuously. For that to take place, the heart needs to be open. And we've been discussing the heart for the last 5 days. The important thing here is this. You see, two things come. One, as I said, ma'rifah. The other thing that comes is ishq. What Imam Hussein teaches you is the power of love. And that's something which is important. Look. The most superior human thing that we have is not just the intellect, because angels have intellect too. What makes us as human beings superior to the angels, or the potential to be superior, is one thing, and that is the ability to love. Human beings have a phenomenal ability to love. So when you get to the nth level of love, the highest maqam of ishq is what? For you to realize that love is one thing. The purpose Adam Adam's purpose for being removed from heaven essentially was what? That when he came to this world, he cried. Why did he cry? There was a longing for Allah. That longing completes your love and increases your love. Go today and see any love poetry which has become famous. Layli Majnun, Shakespeare, whatever it may be, Shakespeare's writings, that is, Romeo and Juliet. How do they become famous? One reason: the guy never gets the girl, or the girl never gets the guy. There's a longingness there. And the Urafa have encapsulated this within poetry. And you've seen this, right? There's so much Irfani poetry, so to speak, and it talks about love, and people think, are these guys mad? Actually, it's not the case. It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor for ishq of Allah. That when you go after Allah, your tears are there until you don't gain union. And in this way, Adam as well, when he was separated from the Creator, he cried. And he cried, and he cried, and he cried. One day, Jibreel comes to him. And Jibreel says something very profound. I remember Ayatollah Behjet saying this in one of his lessons. Somebody may have asked, I don't know, but I remember him replying. He said, Adam, in this world when he came, had children, had grandchildren. But he never got himself involved in their affairs. He always sat quietly listening, never spoke. He was at that stage of his life or his existence that he listened and he didn't speak. So one of his children asked him, they said, look, granddad, if you could say granddad, said to Adam, why is it that you don't speak for? Why is it that you're quiet for? So he replied, he said, when I came down from there to here, Jibreel came to me and said to me, if you want to return back to the maqam that you are at, silence. Silence. Why? When the tongue closes, the heart opens. When the heart opens, the messages come. Silence is something that not all of us can achieve. Some of us, if somebody doesn't talk for 30 seconds, they've got to start talking. And they've got to talk, and they've got to talk, and they've got to talk. Why? Silence is difficult. But if you can get to the realm of silence, and I'm not saying do it every day, one day, let's say on a Sunday, you've got nothing to do, nothing better to do, switch your phone off. Not for the whole day, because you can't. By Maghrib time, you'll have heart failure. That's how reliant we are on our phones. So let's do this. 9 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours. Silence. Switch your phone off. Go for a walk. Put your phone in the home. And you don't need to feel nervous. There was a time where you had no mobile phones. There was a time. How did you get around then? Life still revolved. Things still happened. No issue. Put your phone to one side. Go for a walk. Why go for a walk? Go to greenery. Hadith is there. One of the hadith, the Imam says, somebody was depressed. He says, go to the forest, go to greenery. The green color, which is in nature itself, is a healing property for you, for your mind, for your body, for your soul. Look, everything is there in the akhbar of Ali Muhammad alayhi salam. The problem is we don't go into it and investigate it. Now, why do I say all of this for? See, ishq. When you cry for Sayyid al-Shuhada, you're actually jumping to the highest level. Have you not seen those people who say, why do you cry for Imam Hussein? Then they have a breakup with someone, be it their wife, be it their husband, their son says something, their daughter says something, what happens? They start crying. So what are you crying for now then? No, I'm missing my love. I'm feeling separation. Well, actually, let me tell you something. The reason why Shias cry is not just for the sake of it. You paid someone, they couldn't cry. They could fake crying, but when true tears come, it's because there's a connection there. There's a separation there. You know, we're sitting here today. Does your heart not long to be in Karbala? Does it not long for that? Didn't your Imam say, every step that you take, a 1,000 Hajj, 1,000 Umrah? The only person in history who cut Hajj short was who? Sayyid al-Shuhada. He cuts Hajj short, he goes towards Kufa, ends up in Karbala. But in Karbala, he does all of the rites of Hajj in Karbala. From the focal point, he goes as far as Arafah. Arafah is Ma'rifah. 72 men on the night of Ashura gain Ma'rifah. But your Hajj isn't complete. Sacrifice. Where did the sacrifice come? He says, take Ali Akbar, take Ali Asghar, take whoever you wanted to. In the same way, where do you go? Baytullah. What is it? The focal point of Tawheed. What was Hussein showing in Karbala? Tawheed. What is Imam-e-Ma'sum? Imam-e-Ma'sum is the Kaaba. What do you think Adam was? When Allah says, وَنَفَقْتَ فِيهِمْ مِنْ رُوحِ Bow. Who are they bowing to? They were doing tamarkus to Adam. Because Adam was the Qibla for Alam-e-Nur. Why? Insan-e-Kamil. Adam's maqam, our Prophet's maqam, is higher than the Kaaba. Kaaba's bricks and mortar. It's what it symbolizes. So Insan-e-Kamil is greater than the Kaaba. Why? Because it symbolizes far greater. Go to the time of the fourth Imam and see. What are you seeing? Your Imam-e-Ma'sum is present. Farazdaq writes a poem. What does he say in that? If Farazdaq was wrong, the Imam would have corrected him. What does Farazdaq say? He looks at the Khalifa and says, you don't know who this person is? This person is that person. He doesn't go to Hajar-e-Aswad. Hajar-e-Aswad comes to him to kiss his hand. And what does Abbas say when he stands up in front of, on top of the Kaaba before going? What does he say? You've looked, you've read. What does he say? He says this, had it not been for the mashiat of Allah, Hussein wouldn't need to go around the Kaaba, the Kaaba would go around Hussein. This is what Sayyid al-Shuhada symbolizes. Abbas is saying, what is he saying? He's saying it's because of my father's feet touching the Kaaba that the Kaaba becomes the Kaaba. Which father is he talking about? The one who was born in the Kaaba. The khutbah at the moment is generally in my mind, it's not in my mind today. But inshallah, in the coming nights, I'll recite the khutbah for you that Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas alayhi salam recites for the people of Mecca. He says, oh kafir, oh those people who are ghadir. He addresses them like that. Why? When you go against Imam al-Ma'sum, the Imam is there in front of you. There's no excuse then. Today, yes, there's an excuse because your Imam isn't there. The minute you go against Hujjatullah, you're going against Allah itself. Looks to them as though treacherous people. Do you not know who this is? This is Hussein ibn Ali. So understand, ma'rifah is very important. And between ma'rifah, how does one get ma'rifah? Ishq. You open the heart up. So look. There was a point that I mentioned yesterday. Again, for the last two nights, I've not been able to complete this point. Today, hopefully, I can complete it so we can move on. Maybe there's a reason why. Every time I've started in the last two nights, the breaks have come on for some reason. You know who I wanted to talk about? Where we need to complete? It is imperative for you Shias, including myself, because I'm also a Shia, to have ma'rif of Zahra alayhi salam. I mentioned a hadith yesterday, I didn't complete it. وَلَوْلَ فَاطِمَا لَمَا خَلَقْتُكُمَا Had it not been for Fatima, Allah would not have created the Prophet, or Amir al-Mu'mineen, or the Aflaq. Does that mean her maqam is greater than Amir al-Mu'mineen's? No. Does that mean her maqam is greater than Rasulullah's? No. Does that mean that she was the first in creation? No. Explanation is this. I gave half of the explanation, not the complete form of the explanation. I said yesterday, Arsh of Allah is the highest level of existence. It's from the Arsh that the Quran comes down. Highest level. Arsh symbolizes the Qudra and the Ilm of Allah. Arsh is created from the Nur of the Prophet, Haqiqat al-Muhammadiyya. Why? Because the first thing, the Kun, is the haqiqah of the Prophet. But then the hadith says, it says that if from the nur of Amir al-Mu'mineen, for example, The skies were created, meaning Alam al-Mawara. And from the nur of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the angels were created, the huris and so forth were created. The pillars that uphold the arsh, which is known as was created from the nur of Zahra. And then no pillars there, the entire arsh would collapse. This is why she's known as Abiha. Means what? Foundations, pillars, roots. She's the roots that upholds Alam al-Kawn. So understand that. And this is why they say that there are certain qualities that a person has. Look, I've given this hadith so many times. The Shia of Zahra, right? Shia of Fatima alayhi salam. But look, what are the conditions? Understand these conditions so that we can understand how best to move forward. What did we say? The first condition that we've said before, the first condition of being a true Shia of Zahra is what? Tawalla, tabarra, both of these two things come together. You know when you're reciting ziyara when you go to Najaf or Karbala, what are you saying that ziyara? Every single day you recite ziyara, right? Let's say you recite ziyara to Ashura. Somebody recites, what are you saying? What are you saying to the Ahlul Bayt? That I want your ma'rifah. Ma'rifatikum wa ma'rifati awliyaikum. وَرَزَّقْنَا الْبَرَاعَةِ مِنْ أَعْدَائِكُمْ. Where does it all start off from? فَأَصَلُ اللَّهِ الَّذِي أَكْرَمَنِي بِمَعْرِفَتِكُمْ وَمَعْرِفَةِ أَوْلِيَائِكُمْ. Begins here. You want ma'rifah of Ahlul Bayt, right? But the ma'rifah of Ahlul Bayt is not complete until you don't have ma'rifah of the awliya of Ahlul Bayt. Everything comes full circle then. Who are the awliya of Ahlul Bayt? Salman? No, you are. Shia of Ahlul Bayt. Okay, you need to be Shia in the correct sense of the term Shia. And perhaps majority of people who claim to be Shia may not be the correct Shia. But in this day and age, there is a huge proportion of people who are Shia of Ahlul Bayt. They follow the teachings of Ahlul Bayt to a T. Here it says, ma'rifah of the awliya. Awliya of Ahlul Bayt is important. How do you gain that ma'rifah? If you're backbiting about one another, for example, if you're hurting one another, for example, if we're gossiping without reason, and there's no reason for gossip, there's one thing. Look, I'll give you an example. Somebody comes for your daughter. It's your haq that you tell the issues about that person. Why? Because otherwise they get married, God forbid, they get divorced. Aside from that, are you allowed to open something up about a person? No. You can point out the mistake, but you can't character assassinate them. And that's what's important. Even in your practical life, in your professional life, look, people do wrong. Point out the issue that's wrong. Don't say the person's wrong. The person's a good person. Especially if the followers, all of the Ahlul Bayt followers, we're meant to love one another. And if we don't, then we're outside the ma'rifah, we're outside the wilayah of Ahlul Bayt. What did we say the other day? What's the most important thing here? Huquq, seven huquq that you have over one another. One of them is this, what you want for yourself, one for your brother. And if you're truly a Shia, you'd want your brother to do islah of you when you're wrong. If I'm quiet, and if I'm not saying something, then I'm not a true brother, right? What does Imam say, Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam? Your brother's a person who tells you your flaws. But you don't tell somebody's flaws by doing this and then coming in like that. Kindness, compassion. How would you like it? How would you, somebody to rub your back? Come, why don't you sit down, give you a cup of tea? So listen, brother, you know, I hate to say it, I don't want to say it like this, but you know what? This could have been done better, right? And there's no golden way of doing it. Evaluate the situation, use your hikmah, and then go forward and solve the issue. And these are all important steps. But how'd you become awliya of Ahlul Bayt? Look at Ibrahim and find out how you become awliya of Ahlul Bayt. How did Ibrahim become? First thing was this, generosity. How generous are we as human beings? Do we give to people? Ulama of Irfan have gone as far as to say that if a person comes to you and they beg for something, at least just give them something small. So when they ask the Urafa, how do we know if this person is sincere or not? Look into your heart and see. Your heart tells you if this person is needy or not. And if the person isn't needy, but you know that he may not have invested in the wrong things, just give him something. Don't leave a person to go empty-handed. Some people turn around and say, well, look, I don't know if he's going to go and get drunk or go on drugs. Okay, if a person says, I'm hungry, go and buy him a sandwich. Buy him a burger. Buy him something. But don't let a person go empty-handed. Why? Because the minute you let somebody go empty-handed, it's as if you've rejected the hand of Allah coming towards you. Whatever you have in your pocket, do you think these stories are just stories? Where Amir al-Mu'mineen comes home after Khaybar and has nothing left? Why? He's given everything in the way of Allah? These are not stories just to show how great he is. The stories are there so you can apply the stories. The problem with us today is that we love the name of Amir al-Mu'mineen, we have no quality of his that we implement. The most important thing is implementation of the qualities of the Imam. So look, we've hammered this a lot, but there's a need for this. Generosity is one thing. Shall I tell you a second thing? Tawakkul in Allah. Look, tawakkul in Allah just doesn't come like that. Ibrahim had tawakkul. What did you see with Ibrahim? Ibrahim's been chucked into the fire. As he's been chucked into the fire, what happens? Right, we narrated this a couple of days ago. Jibreel comes forward and says, can I help you? He says, I don't want your help. I want his help. But you know what else that means? Develop it forward. Asking help from Allah is this. Every Shia has izzat nafs. Do not destroy your izzah in front of somebody else. You know, many a time you find a person, when you meet them, straight away, sometimes even for the first time, my life is so bad, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. And you're thinking to yourself, wow. You know, it reminds me of a story last year. I arrived in a place, I'm not going to mention where. From the airport to the house was 45 minutes. I was there to recite. In 45 minutes, I knew this guy's entire shajara of issues that he was having. And by the end of it, generally, as you know, I've got a short temper anyway. So I took him inside and I said, brother, you've got to respect. Don't lower that respect in front of anybody. So look, jokes aside, it's important though. Don't divulge everything in front of people. You know why? Have faith in God. Eventually, God is going to solve your issue anyway. Who's going to, you think this person's going to solve the issue? Half of the people are going to laugh at you. The other half don't want to know, don't want anything to do with you. Have you ever been to somebody's door continuously? What do? Eventually, they close the door. Allah's the opposite of that. He's saying, keep on knocking on my door. I like it. I enjoy it. He likes it. Keep on knocking on his door. Why'd you stop knocking on his door? Well, I think our du'as are not being answered. No. Allah knows when to answer your du'as, but He wants you to continue to knock. It's been 7 years, it's been 10 years. Zachariah had a child when he was aged. Ibrahim and Sarah had children when they were aged. They knocked for many years. Allah gives, knock. One tradition says, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. You know what he did du'a for after the death of Zahra when he marries Umm al-Baneen? He wants a son. One tradition says, 10 years. Why do you think the age disparity was so huge? How old was Abul Fadl Abbas alayhi salam? Highest number, let's say 37. How old was Sayyidul Shuhada? 57. What's the age difference? 20 years. Sayyidah Zainab brought Abbas up like a mother brings up. The relationship is not a brother-sister relationship. It's a mother-son relationship. She nurtured him, she taught him. It's a famous tradition that says, one day Amir al-Mu'mineen walks into the house. He sees both of his daughters are holding Abbas's hand by the finger and they're helping him to walk. At that day, at that time, Amir al-Mu'mineen proudly says, today my daughters are teaching my son how to walk. At that moment, Sayyidah Zainab replies, she says, no father, we're learning to walk under the shadow of Abbas. This is who they are. This is who they are. The dua of Amir al-Mu'mineen is known as Abbas. He knocked on the door for 10 years. Every prayer, Amir al-Mu'mineen is mustajab al-da'wah. Istajab, like this, he's insan-e-kamil. So why pray? He was teaching us a lesson. Everything happens in his time. If Amir al-Mu'mineen wanted to, he could have forced it like that. Sahib-e-Wala, is there anyone who can stop? 4,000 miracles he performed in Kufa. More than all of the Anbiya's miracles recorded combined is how many Amir al-Mu'mineen in 4 years performed. Why is that? Because the prophets don't need to prove anymore that they're prophets. Amir al-Mu'mineen needed to prove that he was truly the Khalifa of Rasulullah and Allah. Thousands of miracles. Wherever Amir al-Mu'mineen went, miracles happened. This is why when the people came to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, what did they say? They said, your father can perform miracles, your brother can perform miracles. If you're truly an Imam, where's your miracle? Imam was sitting there in his house. He says, go to the room next door adjacent. When they went inside of the room, he said, do you recognize my father? They said, of course we do. They looked, Amir al-Mu'mineen was standing there. That's Isma Azam. That's a man who has control of both realms. Hujjat of Allah is one not just controlling this realm, but the other realm as well. And there's very few times in history you see this. Quran tells you in the Quran there were two hujjas at one time. One was Khidr in one realm, one was Musa in another realm. But Rasulullah is that eye that brings both eyes together. This realm and that realm. And so his khalifas also are this realm and that realm. If they're not, then they're not his khalifas. If they're not like him, then they're not his khalifas. If when they lie down, they don't look like him and feel like him and smell like him, they're not his khalifas. When those people who've lived with the Prophet mistaken him at night time for Amir al-Mu'mineen lying on the bed, that is a khalifa. Why? Because the purpose is that he is the successor to that Prophet. He doesn't need to be a Prophet. These are all titles. They're various spiritual maqamat. But remember one thing, that maqam which is above everything is the maqam of wali. Allah is wali. Allah is not Rasul, is not Nabi. And our Prophet is the greatest of all creation. So his successor is also the greatest of all creation. This is what Amir al-Mu'mineen symbolizes. This is why it's Madhar al-Ajaib. What is the Imam alayhi salam? Imam is the manifestation of the sifat and asma of Allah. Amir al-Mu'mineen is Isma Azam. His haqiqah is Isma Azam. When you call upon him, what are you essentially calling? You're going into the heart of it. In the name of Amir al-Mu'mineen lies the greatest name of Allah. You think Allah's physically going to come down? No. A name is also a creation. Allah is above names. But this entire world rests on letters because it rests on huruf. It rests on letters. This is why when you look into Ulum al-Ghariba, there's a huge chapter in and of itself for huruf, for numbers, for all of the various different signs. Look and see. Why is this hadith so prominent? That when the Imam says, he says, all of reality can be encapsulated in the Qur'an. And the message of the Qur'an can be... Remember, the Qur'an is a manifestation of the Arsh. And the Qur'an can be encapsulated in the first chapter. And the first chapter into the Bismillah. And the Bismillah into the Ba. What does he say? He says, I'm the Nuqta, I'm the dot under the Ba. What does that symbolize? Look at Ba. Ba has two lines, even within Hebrew, two lines, connection. One symbolizing Alam al-Mawara, one symbolizing Alam al-Mulk, or Mulk and Malakut. That dot means what? From that dot, the entire Ba comes. The creation of the world, the Kun, came from the Nur of Ali. That Nur is one with the Nur of the Prophet. So it comes together. And who's the Muwakkil of the Ba? Every letter has a muwakkil, guardian. The muwakkil of the Ba is Jibreel. It isn't the fact that Amir al-Mu'mineen is the teacher of Jibreel, it's the fact that Jibreel comes from Amir al-Mu'mineen. If only we understood. Look at the alif. Alif symbolizes Tawheed. 1. Who is the muwakkil of alif? Now that we're on this, I wasn't going to mention this, but now we may as well. Israfil. Who is Israfil? According to some traditions, the greatest of all of the angels is Israfil. Why? Because he comes down to blow the trumpets. When he comes, the world ends. Israfil has a big responsibility. Jibreel brings down wahi. Israfil is there for Allah to blow the trumpet. That brings the entire world to an end. That combines you back, takes you back to the higher realms. So let me tell you something. If Israel comes into the physical world, what does that mean? That means there's something big about to happen. Do you know when Israfil came to the physical world? Shall I tell you? Israfil, Jibreel, and Mikhail, three angels descend. Come to Rasulullah. When Rasulullah was sitting there, Rasulullah sees Jibreel and he says, I can see Jibreel in his actual form. Remember, depending on Rasulullah's hal, Jibreel would come in different stages. Sometimes he would come as a companion of his, and then onwards. The highest level, remember, Jibreel's immaterial. Therefore, this means that Rasulullah's heart's open completely to the highest level that he can see everything. The only other time the tradition says that he saw Jibreel in his absolute form was when the Quran was being revealed on Laylatul Qadr. So obviously now, something big is about to happen, which equals Laylatul Qadr and the entire Quran coming down. But not just that, it's not just Jibreel who's come down, now Israfil and Mikhail have come down. So when all three of them come down, what do they say to Rasulullah? They bring something for Rasulullah. They bring something for him. When they give it to him, they say, the hukum from Allah is you eat this. What is this? Go to the hadith of Mi'raj and see. There was a tree there. There was a fruit there. That fruit, when Rasulullah held it, the nur was so bright. In Hayra, he says, what is this nur? The reply comes, this is the nur of Fatima alayhi salam. What is this nur? So he asks. The reply comes, she goes directly to the progeny because she's a nur. Her nur was found in Bayt al-Ma'mur. Look at the way Allah does this. The nur is in Bayt al-Ma'mur. What is Bayt al-Ma'mur? The Kaaba, which is four heavens up. And her husband's where? In the Kaaba. Look, everything is connected. Everything is connected. Kaaba links to Kaaba. One is from the house of God, the other one is from the house of Rasulullah. One of them is Madhar al-Ajayb, and the other one is Qurba. So what happens then? Look, generally I narrate this in Fatimiyah. But there's a conclusion I want to take you to. Hukum is given, plate has come down, Rasulullah, you eat this. Right? When does he eat it? After 40 days of fasting. So that's a lesson for all of us. When you want to have children, fast for 40 days so that you're pure. These are all important things. Don't take it lightly. If you want pure children, you've got to put the effort. It's not that easy. 40 days fast. Rasulullah fasted. Jibreel came to tell him to fast. He said, for 40 days you have to separate from Khadija. And at that moment, Rasulullah says to his companion, go and tell Khadija, it's not because I'm angry or anything like that, it's just I've been given the hukum. Where does he go to? When Allah wanted to give revelation on Musa, he sends him to the mountains. Isa to the desert. Ibrahim to the cave. Where does Rasulullah go? House of Fatima bint Asad. Why? There's an Amir al-Mu'mineen there. Rasulullah always would say to Amir al-Mu'mineen, invite people in to eat. But that day when the fruit came down, Jibreel said, nobody can eat this, you eat this yourself. And once you've eaten this, you go directly, it's wajib, go directly to Khadija and transfer this nur into her. Why is that? Because this nur is not from anywhere else. See who Fatima alayhi salam is. Understand who she is. Her nur is beyond this world. She's the markaz of the Ahlul Bayt. So now to be her Shia, to be her friend, we're giving you the conditions. One of them is generosity towards creation. But the other is this. You love who we love. What was the first step? What did we say? Ma'rifah of Them, and then after that, the awliya. How do we get to the ma'rif of the awliya? As we said, start off with being generous. Then after that, what was the second one, if you remember? Trust in Allah. Hope in Allah. This means don't ever expose yourself. And then after that, the final is this. Ibrahim was famous for one thing. Salat al-Layl. Worship Allah at night time. At night time he would stand there worshipping. Let me give you a story, just to emphasize this. They say when Allama Tabatabai came for the first time to Najaf, he goes to the shrine of Amir al-Mu'minin and he says, Mawla, I'm gharib here. I'm lonely, I don't have anyone to go to. That night when he goes to his house or his room, at night time there's a knock on the door. He opens the door. Sayyid Ali Qazi Marhum, standing there. He looks up and he says, oh my God, you came up to my house? Now remember, there was a maternal link between the two. Both of them were from Tabriz. And there was a maternal link there. He was an uncle, and distant uncle. But anyhow, he says, son, I know you're gharib. I want to give you some advice. He says, tell me, what advice? Obviously, the king of the Urafa, standing there. He says, son, if you want this world, meaning risk, good marriage, family, your hurdles removed, pray Salat al-Layl. And if you want the hereafter and all of its glories, pray Salat al-Layl. If you want the love of the 12th Imam, pray Salat al-Layl. In another tradition it says, look, Salat al-Layl has many benefits, from risk to marriage, etc., etc., etc. But the one thing I will say here as well, in another tradition it says Ibrahim used to do sajda a lot. Go into sajda. Now how many people do sajda? Go into sajda. His extended sajda was such that Allah raised him. Now look, for me and you, we can turn around and say, look, our faith isn't that much, our iman isn't that much. So what's our responsibility? Go into sajda. Whenever you get an opportunity, you're free, you've got some time, go into sajda. It's not a bad thing. Why? The more that you do sajda, the more it builds up. What are you building up? Your faith. Remember, it's amali. Allah tests you first. So when you're tested, go into sajda. Build yourself up. It's not easy. I know that. When a person is tested, it's difficult. Your faith fluctuates. There's many a time it fluctuates. But just remember this. You've got to go through some test, trial and tribulation, for your ma'rifah to increase. So look, there's a lot of things that we're raising. And our time is going quickly. And I want to bring everything together. Because then we've only got a few nights. And in that I want to discuss a particular reality. And that reality is this. Look, I'm going to leave perhaps a very small nugget here and then we move on. If you look at the current times and the current climate, if you look at the Middle East, you will not understand the Middle East at all if you don't understand one philosophy. What is that? In Judaism, it's known as the Mashiach. In Christianity, it's known as the Rapture. In Islam, it's known as Mahdi or the Messianism. The entire religions at the moment, or especially the dynamics in the Middle East, is geared towards what? The last days. Even within Sunni and Shia, the understanding is different. And hopefully tomorrow when we go into it, we'll discuss it further. We'll see where the world lies and where our responsibility is. How has Shiism survived so long for? The oldest religion within Shiism, or the oldest school of thought, we could say, the oldest sect in Islam is Shiism. Everything else evolved much afterwards. Today you have the Barelwis, 150 years old max, or 100 years old max. Diobandis, so forth. Or the Maturidi, which came 150 years after the death of the Prophet. Or the Ash'ara. Or the, let's say the Jabariyun, whatever school maktab they follow, essentially came afterwards. Fiqh-wise, somebody's Hanafi, somebody's Hanbali. All of them came much later. You're the only people who were there from the very beginning of its inception. The term Shia has been there. The minute Rasulullah's eyes closed, straight away two groups formed. And then after that, another two groups formed. In the time of Uthman, and afterwards there were only two groups. The Shia or the Uthmani. Who were the Uthmanis in those days? Those people who had enmity towards Amir al-Mu'mineen. And those people who loved Amir al-Mu'mineen. And then there's four categories of that, and etc, etc. Look, I don't want to go into the history of the discussion. The most important thing that I want to say is this. You've survived for 1400 years because some principles are there. Obviously, it's not for me to discuss all of them from a member. But the one thing I will do is I'll give you in signs why you survived. In the next couple of nights, we'll look at it. But I know that you're tired. You've gone through maybe 50 minutes of a discussion. And I know in different parts of the world, it's different timings of salah. So look, we'll carry this discussion on tomorrow. The one thing I will say at this stage is this, and the final thing is this. We need to actively change our life. Actively become more empathetic. First start with your family, with your children. Then you see slowly, slowly, what does empathy really mean? You begin to feel the pain of other people. You know, they say Amir al-Mu'mineen never cried, but there's two people that made him cry. One, yatim. When he saw a person who didn't have a father, yatim, he'd start crying. It hurt him. Second type of people, people who are oppressed. Widowers, in those days. People who were oppressed started to cry. Look, in this day and age where you see so much oppression, you feel helpless because you can't do anything. The smallest thing you can do is cry, right? Smallest thing you can do is feel it in your heart. Don't become desensitized. Today the media shows so much that it's so easy to become desensitized. When there are 2 million people in prison at the moment in a particular part of the world, the least you can do is shed a tear. Pray for them. When a particular people in a particular part of the world are being exterminated, the least you can do is shed a tear. Remember one thing. If you don't do that, a day will come when that will come on you as well. History is such. Look and see. After World War II, we thought no more wars. How quickly humanity forgets everything. Look where we are today. Look where we are today. And we haven't learnt anything from the past. Why is that? Greed. It's a battle over resources. It's all about this. If you have this, even a monkey becomes your dad. Becomes your uncle. Becomes your business partner. But if you don't have this, then even your own father becomes otherwise. What do we do then? Empathy. Start feeling people's pain automatically. You come in. Pushed away. That's what Amir al-Mu'mineen did. Have you not seen that night when he passed away? When he was hit by Ibn Muljim on the head, what did he say? When the doctors came, they saw Amir al-Mu'mineen's face yellow. They said, look, we can't stop him from dying, but we can release his pain. So the doctor said, why don't you go out and ask? Ali needs milk. Tradition says there was a knock on the door. Imam Hassan went and opened the door. What did he see? Small children holding bowls in their hand. And you know what they were saying? They were saying, please don't take our father away. We want to give our milk. What does the Imam say? Imam says, son Hassan, I've never taken the haqq of a yatim. Imam Hassan says, my father says, I've never taken the haqq of a yatim. The yatim say, we're giving our haqq to him. He says, no, I will not take it. That's your Imam. We haven't learned a lesson from that Imam? It's our responsibility. So look, I'm going to bring this to a close. Inshallah, from tomorrow, we go deeper into this discussion. Just remember who you're here for today. Look, in this period of COVID-19, it becomes even more important for you to do azah. It becomes even more important that the intensity of azah increases. Majlis of Sayyidul Shuhada is extremely important to help with all of this. What did we say yesterday? When natural disasters come, When Waba and Bala come, gladden the heart of Zahara. How do you do that, Dhikr of Hussein? Tonight I want to recite about a person that breaks my own heart. It's difficult for me to recite. Their father sitting in this room. Fathers, you know what your son means to you as he grows older. I wish I could recite the length that I generally do. I won't be able to. I'm only going to say two or three things and that's it. It's now your own nasib if tears come into your eyes. But if they do, and I'm sure they will, do dua. Allah will accept it. When Ali Akbar was heading towards Karbala with Sayyid al-Shuhada, he asked him a question. When he sees all the army coming one by one to kill his father, he says, "Father, tell us, are we on the haq?" Imam Hussein replied, he said, "Yes, we're on the haq." Then he said, "Then I don't care. To die for you will be a pleasure." Karbala comes. 1 day goes by, 2 days go by, 7 days go by, day of Ashura comes. On the day of Ashura, Ali Akbar comes to Sayyid al-Shuhada and asks him, "I want to go into the battlefield." Imam says something. He says, "Son, go and do wida, ask permission from three people. First, your brother, Sayyidah Zainab, and your mother who raised you." Look, I wish I could complete this. I don't think I'll be able to. Whatever I can say, I'll say. Zahra, know something. The most painful musibah for Zahra is the musibah of Ali Akbar. Before I even start on this, let me give you a story. From Kashan, a group of 40 people go to Karbala. Difficult as it was, they got to Karbala on the night, which is Thursday night, when you have Da'i Kumail. When they got there, they began to wail and mourn, and they were saying to Imam Hussein, "Mawla, we've come from so far away. Our feet are blistered. We were thirsty. Our backs are hurting, but we've come for your love." Somebody stands up and they start reciting the Masaib of Ali Akbar. Everyone cries. People were saying that from the walls there were noises coming as if the walls were crying. And that night when they went to sleep, what did they see? They saw that a voice comes. All of them saw the same dream. And this dream was this: "Get up, Sayyid al-Shuhada is coming." All of them get up, put their hands together. They say, "Mawla, we would have come to you. Why did you come to us for? Why did you do the zahma to come to us for?" You know what the reply was? Sayyid al-Shuhada says, "Anyone who comes to my ziyara, I come to them." And then he turns around and he says, "Back in your hometown, there's a khadim there of mine who puts the shoes of all of the azadar straight. Give him my salam. He's my khadim." Finally, Sayyid al-Shuhada then says, he says, "But please, just remember one thing. If it's ever a Thursday night and it's my haram, then don't ever recite the Masaib of Ali Akbar, because my mother comes down and she can't take it. She says to me, 'Hussein, how was it possible that you were watching when your son was—'" The time for wada of Ali Akbar comes. Who does he go first to? He goes to the tent of Imam Zain al-Abidin. He begins to kiss his hands. He begins to kiss his feet. He begins to kiss his head. Tears begin to fall. Imam Zain al-Abidin opens his eyes. He says, brother, what's befallen that you're crying like this? One thing Ali Akbar says, Baqiya Abuna, Ghariban, Wahidan, Adishanan, Mazluma. Says, our father's become all alone. Our father's thirsty, he's Mazloom. After that he goes. He goes into the tent of who? Sayyidah Zainab. When he comes into that tent, Sayyidah Zainab just looks up, says, son, Ijazah's there for me. Go and ask your mother who bore you. Remember jihad, if your parents are alive, both of them have to agree. Where does he go then? Goes into the tent of his old mother. When he walks in, he puts his head on her lap. She begins to comb his hair and she just says one thing. She says, son, I'm old now. I don't have anyone but you. Fathers and mothers, you know how that feels when your young son is in front of you. You know how that feels. What does she say? She doesn't have any other children. She says, son, I don't have anyone but you. After you, what's going to happen to me? At that moment, Ali Akbar knows. She's not saying no, but indirectly she's saying something. So what does he do? He, in desperation, turns around. Says, mother, on the day of judgment, if my grandmother Fatima al-Zahra comes and says, Layla, your son survived and my son died, what are you going to say? She says, son, go, your father's maqam is greater. One narrator says, Hamid ibn Muslim, you know what he says? He says, I, from all of the shuhada, he says, one of them couldn't even get out the tent properly. Every time he came out, somebody dragged him back. Every time he came out, somebody dragged him back. He says, I saw from underneath, there was a small girl grabbing the knees of her brother and holding her. To the extent that they say the shuhada himself went in, grabbed Ali Akbar and brought him outside. When he brought him outside, Hussein's still a father. Allah never ever showed this to a father. You know what Imam Hussein says? When Ali Akbar is about to ride, he puts his hands together. He says, son, I've had one dream in all of my life that it's not come true. He says, what is it, father? He says, at the age of 7, you started wearing the amama. The first person to put it on was Sayyidah Zainab. After that, your mother was putting on the amama. He said, I had a wish in my heart. One day you would get married. One day I would put the amama on your head. Son, that day hasn't come. Would you allow me to put the imam on your head today? Tall son puts his knees on the ground. He says, Bismillah, father, fulfill what is in your heart. You know what they say? When Amir al-Mu'mineen was going in the battle of Badr, one Rasulullah brings Amir al-Mu'mineen forward like a father does to his son, wraps the imam around his head, says, Nasru min Allahi wa fatun gharib. They say, Sayyid al-Shuhada, wrapping the imam on the head of Ali Akbar, is reciting, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Ali Akbar gets up, gets on his horse. One Christian narrator says, he says, I felt so sorry for Hussein. He says, why? He says, I've never seen a father in that state. As the horse of Ali Akbar accelerated, an old father was running behind the horse. But because he was old, he tripped over, fell onto the ground. He would stand up again and he would run again. Up to the point came when Ali Akbar looked back and he says, father, why are you following me for? He says, only if you had a son like mine. Fathers, I ask you a question. Whose sons are young? Tell me, if your son for the last time was going into the battlefield like that, you'd be tripping over as well. Sayyid al-Shuhada is watching the battle take place. He looks up and he sees the mother of this child is not going to be able to take it. He looks up at Layla and he says, Layla, I've heard from my grandfather Rasulullah that when a mother prays for her son, that dua becomes mustajab. Why don't you go and pray that Ali Akbar for one last time comes to see me? They say Layla goes into a tent, opens her hair up, raises her hands, says, oh, the one who brought Ismail back to Ibrahim, who brought Yusuf back to Yaqub, bring back my son to Hussein. They say Ali Akbar does come back for the final time. He comes back in, he says, "Father, I'm thirsty." Orafar have said, you know what he was saying? He knew Hussein was thirsty. There was one thing he was saying, Orafar have said. They were saying, Orafar say this, as long as the eyes of Imamat were on Ali Akbar couldn't be killed. Ali Akbar was saying, "Father, I want to go into the battlefield and give my life. Take your eye away." In the tradition, it says, "Son, you go now." Hussein turns his head away. Look at this and see. Ali Akbar goes into the battlefield. One person comes, Hassin ibn Numair, the tradition says, has a spear in his hand. At that moment, Sayyid al-Shuhada now was watching. Ibrahim's eyes were covered. Hussein was watching. He takes the spear. He chucks the spear. In the tradition, it says, from the back, it pierces the chest of Ali Akbar. As Ali Akbar begins to fall, Hassin ibn Numair says, maybe the father hasn't seen, tries to hoist the son. Spear breaks, Ali Akbar falls. I've seen every single maqatil, every single person called for Imam Hussein for help, even Abbas. Only one person didn't. That person was Ali Akbar. Why? Young son, old father. He says, "Father, don't come. You won't be able to take this." What is Amiras? Sayyid al-Shuhada gets up. He says, "I'm the son of Haydar al-Karrar." Falls onto the ground, back is bent, eyesight's gone. Hore Amali narrates, he says Hussein was saying one thing, "Ya Ali, Ya Ali, Ya Ali." Ulama have argued, was he calling Ali Akbar? They say no, he was looking to Najaf and saying, "Father, come and help me, my son is leaving." "I know you won't be able to take this, I can't recite anymore." Final thing. Body of Ali Akbar did come back. Everybody came to give condolences. One person was missing. Who was it? The mother of Ali Akbar. Sayyid al-Shuhada looks up and he says to Sayyidah Zainab, "Go and find Layla, call her for the final time, she can give her farewells." You know what the tradition says? One mother was sitting on the floor, she was crying. When Sayyidah Zainab walks in, says, "Don't you want to come and give your condolences to your son?" She says, "Zainab, when I found out my son had fallen, my eyesight had gone. I was looking for the tent entry. I couldn't find it anywhere. Every time I tried to get up, I fell down. Zainab, grab my arm and take me to the body of my son." Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Matime Hussein.